This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
And in terms of, there has been a dip, but it's been largely as a result of all the publicity and the attention and the actual revelations as the court case proceeded, hasn't it?
That's right. I think that they know that they're under scrutiny, and they want to show that what they say is, we're slowly moving a big ship. Well, you know, it's been 14 years in the making, and they haven't moved it fast enough. And the court, I think, really has hopefully lost patience with what they're saying they can do on their own.
In 1 year recently, the number of stops and frisks was in the range of 600,000 to 700,000.
That's right. And that is an astronomical number. And we're talking about some people who have said that they've been stopped and frisked themselves upwards of 10, 20 times. It becomes routine course. It becomes a part of daily life. And that's not the way New Yorkers should live.
We want to thank you, Sunita Patel, for being with us from the Center for Constitutional Rights, co-counsel on the Stop and Frisk federal class action lawsuit. That does it for the show. Democracy Now! Is produced by a remarkable group of people. Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nirmin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Masood, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Martinez DeRosa, Nima Allen. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our website, democracynow.org.
It's 5:01, and the PM News is next. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrillhurst University, the University for Grown-Ups, where it's never too late to earn a bachelor's or master's degree to achieve your dreams. Adults of all ages choose Merrillhurst to gain knowledge from professors who practice what they teach. Now enrolling for fall term. Information at merrillhurst.edu/KBOO. And by Dr. Robert Amajoy and the Northwest Center for Colorectal Health, LLC, providing screening colonoscopy to help prevent colorectal cancer, as well as minimally invasive management of colorectal disease. Offices in Portland and Milwaukee. Detailed information at 503-216-5380 or nwcch.com.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Portland appearance of David K. Johnston, author of the book, The Rise of Monopolists, Why the Few Get Rich While Your Paycheck Shrinks. The book explains how the already very rich have for three decades quietly earned huge profits with help from politicians. David K. Johnston will be speaking at the First Unitarian Church on Friday, June 14th at 7 p.m. about the devastating economic stories unfolding in the public record that major media do not cover. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in every Friday at 3 p.m. for Roots of Rock and Roll. Dale Farr and Steve Bricker play rare and vintage records from rhythm and blues, jump blues, rockabilly, and doo-wop, from the birth of rock and roll to the 50s and early 60s. Roots of Rock and Roll, only on KBOO Portland.
Our listeners in Corvallis and Albany will be happy to hear that we have replaced the failed translator and installed a brand new translator. KBOO's new frequency for Corvallis, Albany, and Philomath is 104.3.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a group of moms hold a stroller jam at the Oregon State Capitol in Salem to call for increased background checks on people who buy guns.
A massive oil spill is uncovered in northern Alberta, Canada, and the Texas-based company that owns the site says they didn't know that the oil has been leaking for months.
And the U.S. Supreme Court rules that human genes cannot be patented.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, June 13th, 2013. I'm Aaron J. Bernard.
And I'm Robert Barncord. The Laborers International Union of North America, Local 483, is circulating an online petition to urge the Portland City Council to find an alternate source of revenue to avoid painful budget cuts. Under Mayor Charlie Hale's proposed budget for 2013 and 2014, up to 160 city jobs will be cut, including more than 90 from the police and fire bureaus. For more on these cuts and the petition, KBOO's Sam Bowman spoke with Mark Vorpel, a volunteer with the Solidarity Against Austerity Coalition.
Could you tell me a little bit about the background to this petition?
There was a big hole in the general fund this year of $21.5 million in the Portland City budget. And our reason why we got involved in it is because, again, for the fifth year, they are proposing yet even more cuts, considering some of the air departments that are programs that they are cutting might also, you know, might also hurt some people's lives as well, aside from just laying people off. And, we realized that, there's something really not quite right about this. I mean, for one thing, when you start making cuts, to fill deficits, that means that you are cutting the economic base of, of the citizens to be able to buy more things. Well, that hurts the economy, and that hurts our communities as well. So, we're thinking, well, why isn't there a discussion on raising revenue in being talked about? Why aren't they talking more about going into the internal services funds to help fill this hole, rather than, cutting people's jobs? I mean, the money is out there. So the idea behind this petition is that we've been going to the city hearings and we've been making, connections with a variety of people who are being affected by these cuts. And we are asking them to, get their constituencies and sign on to this thing so we can let city council hear, loud and clear that, the one thing that they're not talking about, raising revenue, by taxing corporations who make many millions of dollars in this city as a result of being here and pay absolutely minimal fees and in effect get all kinds of tax breaks as a result. Why are they getting off without paying their fair share when we're laying people off?
Are there any specific tax breaks that could be rolled back or tax increases that could be instituted during this particular budget cycle?
Portland business income tax is basically paying for their business licensing fee, which is 2.2%. Well, we don't want, that fee to go up on people that are, that food carts or whatever, but there are major big corporations here. Why can't they pay a little bit more that they can easily afford so that we're not laying people off and instead providing jobs and providing better services? We could have a genuinely progressive Multnomah income tax, which we don't have right now. That would be something that we should definitely look into. There are a lot of tax breaks that these big corporations get when they set up business here. For instance, the way that urban renewal is done in this city is that when the they build up an area, that money remains, all the property taxes gathered from that area remain in that area. So as a consequence, we have like Northwest Portland, which is doing quite well and is flush with all kinds of cash. We've got this situation where they have more than they know what to spend. On the other hand, we are being threatened with school closures. We're getting firefighters laid off. We're getting carpenters laid off. The way that they do urban renewal is really kind of really hurting the Portland community wide, because the money just stays in the hands of those who have it, rather than being distributed to equal things out.
What's the timetable that the petition is on?
Well, the city council is going to be voting on the budget on June 20th. So we are wanting to get as many signatures as we possibly can before that date so we can, you know, show them in an unarguable way that there are a lot of people in Portland who think that they're moving things in the wrong direction and not putting community or not putting Portland's values first.
For KABU Evening News, this is Sam Bowman.
A group of mothers and grandmothers marched through the Oregon State Legislature today, calling for the passage of a bill that would limit the sales and transfers of handguns in the state. The so-called Stroller Jam was organized as part of a national grassroots campaign called Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense. Shannon Watts, the head of the new organization, spoke recently on Current TV.
We keep hearing this over and over again, that moms have been the missing voice in this for so many years. We had a great Million Mom March about a decade ago, and then we needed another group of moms to come along and pick up that torch and to say, okay, after Sandy Hook and finding out that, you know, 8 children are shot and killed every day in this country, we're busy every day with our children, but we can't afford not to be activists. We are all accidental activists, and we have to keep up this work. It's an important voice. We are the caretakers, in most part, for this country and for our country's children. We have a moral obligation. What these numbers show is that this is a nonpartisan issue, that you don't have to be a Democrat and you don't have to be a Republican to believe that we don't have enough gun laws in this country and that our gun violence has become an epidemic of public health crisis proportions. It doesn't matter if you live in a red state or a blue state or in the South or in the North. This is an issue that all Americans agree needs to be fixed and solved. And if legislators don't listen to these polling numbers and this data, then we will have new legislators very soon who will.
In Oregon, the local branch of Moms Demand Action say they are focusing on 4 bills currently being considered by the state legislature to help increase gun safety in the state. Kara Murray, with the Portland branch of the group, was part of today's stroller jam at the state capitol.
It's been 6 months since the Sandy Hook shooting in Connecticut, and there's been a coordinated events across the country just to memorialize that. There were about 30 moms and children that were representing the 3 chapters in Oregon. There's the Portland chapter, the Mid-Willamette chapter, and the Southern Oregon chapter. And with only 2 weeks left in the legislative session, our goal was to make some noise in Salem and let our legislators know that we're still here and we're still hoping for some movement on the 4 Senate bills that are currently in the legislature. Senate Bill 700 requires universal background checks, so that would close the private sale loophole. There is an exception for immediate family transfers, and there are 3 other bills as well. Senate Bill 347, which would allow school districts to limit guns in K-12 schools. Senate Bill 699, which would allow public buildings to not openly carry guns in public buildings, significantly the Capitol building. So currently, people with concealed weapons permits are allowed to carry openly in the Capitol building, even though you're not allowed to carry signs in the Capitol building. And then the last one is Senate Bill 796, and it just requires better training for concealed handgun licenses. We are short 1 vote, so that's what has been held up in the Senate, and it's gone to the Rules Committee, and they're just trying to negotiate and hopefully get it passed in this session.
That was Kara Murray, a local mom and gun control advocate. The website for the group organizing today's event and the ongoing campaign can be found at momsdemandaction.org.
The House Rules Committee took a look at several bills today aimed at scrutinizing paid signature gatherers. One bill of note, Senate Bill 154, required paid petition gatherers to register with the Secretary of State and complete training subscribed by the state. Here is testimony from today's hearing.
Chair Garrett, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kathy Eaton, the governance coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. We believe that 154 closes a gap that has been in the initiative process. when an organization or an individual or an entity pays people to gather signatures on election petitions, registration with the Secretary of State should be mandatory, which this bill now requires. The requirement that the training prescribed by the Secretary relative to knowledge about the petition campaign regulations and election laws that need to be taken by the representatives of the sponsoring person or the organization, we believe that helps to ensure compliance. And we believe this is an important piece that actually helps make our initiative process better. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Garrett, members of the committee, my name is Joe Basler. I work for Oregon AFSCME. We represent about 24,000 members across the state. We have a very interesting relationship with the ballot initiative process. We have a lot of experience. We've both tried to, we've used volunteers to gather signatures for things like the minimum wage. We've also been, frankly, victimized by ballot measures that have gone after us and that we know where bad, unscrupulous things happen in the gathering of those signatures. But we've also paid to have be part of a coalition to start getting things on the ballot. We in no way have any desire to shut down the process because, frankly, we use it sometimes. But we do believe that everyone who gathers signatures should do it legally and do it in the same level playing field. Right now, signature gatherers have to register, but those companies that train them and set them up and sort of instruct them on how to do it don't have to register. They don't have to say that they are complying with the law. And we have found through signature gatherers and sort of, you know, people running into each other, you know, some of the signature gathering towards the end when the deadline gets closer, they start getting frantic, they start getting worried. Out-of-state corporations sort of come in and start running the signature gathering process, and they'll bring in their training manuals from Colorado or New Mexico and say, here you go, this is how you gather signatures, and those aren't our laws. And so what we want to do is say, you know, if you're here and you're gathering signatures and you're being part of the process, you need to follow our laws, and you need to acknowledge and know what they are. Last time I testified in the Senate in favor. I haven't switched. I'm still in favor. We also testified with Ted Blazek, who couldn't be here today, but he is submitting written testimony. I don't know if it has come in yet, who is a signature gathering company owner who does comply with the law. And, you know, his biggest concern, not to put too many words in his mouth, but you can listen to the tape, was he follows the law, and it's unfair for him competition-wise because he follows Oregon's laws, and these companies sometimes don't. Thank you very much.
That was testimony from a House Rules Committee hearing today regarding Senate Bill 154, which would require paid petition gatherers to register with the Secretary of State and complete a mandatory training.
Oregon Governor John Kitzhaber's staff has indicated that he may compromise on a key component of his Governor's Commission on Public Safety recommendations. The policy in question is poised to change the way juvenile offenders are moved through Oregon's criminal justice system. In collaboration with the Oregon News Service, I filed this story earlier today.
The long state legislative session has been full of promises to reform Oregon's criminal justice system, putting more focus on crime prevention and less on locking people up. Now, advocates for young offenders say all but a handful might be left out of that reform effort in a compromise to appease district attorneys. The Governor's Commission on Public Safety recommended allowing young people to earn a judge's review of their sentence after serving most of their time. But David Rogers with the Partnership for Safety and Justice says the compromise deal is much more narrow.
The governor's office seems to be supporting a watered-down earned review policy that will impact a very tiny number of youth, maybe 8 to 10 young people. And he expects that doing that, he'll be able to get away with saying that he's done something.
Rogers says the idea of allowing judges more discretion in juvenile cases has had bipartisan support among lawmakers, and also in a poll of Oregon voters taken 2 months ago. If the commission's recommendations are bypassed, Oregon will be bucking a national trend that includes 20 years of juvenile justice research. Liz Ryan with the Campaign for Youth Justice says the new focus in many states is on rehabilitation and ensuring that a young person doesn't reoffend.
A number of states have taken steps to change their laws, removing kids from automatic prosecution in adult criminal court, giving judges more discretion on whether or not to transfer kids to adult court, and also removing kids from adult jails and prisons. this session, we don't want Oregon to get left behind.
Ryan says just this year, four more states changed their laws to ensure that juveniles are treated differently and separately from adults in the court system. Rogers is concerned that members of the Joint Legislative Committee on Public Safety might accept the compromise, even if they aren't happy with it.
Many of them would like to see their very hard work not totally wasted. So I think that, you know, because time is of the essence here, I think the co-chairs of the committee are essentially inclined to take something rather than nothing.
The legislative session ends at the end of June. In collaboration with Oregon News Service, this is Aaron J. Bernard with KBOO News.
The U.S. Department of Transportation has agreed to release $15 million in funds to repair an Interstate 5 bridge that collapsed 3 weeks ago. The bridge over the Skagit River in northern Washington collapsed when a truck carrying an oversized load hit one of the bridge supports. No one was killed, but several motorists were injured when their cars plunged into the river. The Federal Highway Administration says that the bridge will be fully repaired by October 1st. A temporary span will be in place by this time next week, but traffic will be limited to 35 miles an hour. This section of I-5 carries an estimated 71,000 vehicles a day, and it is the only north-south interstate in the state of Washington. The collapse of the bridge brought to the forefront infrastructure concerns that include tens of thousands of failing bridges across the entire United States.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Free Speech Radio after this newscast, followed by Wisdom of the Elders at 6, which features Native American storytelling and poetry. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather is partly cloudy with a high near 72.
It's 22 minutes after 5 and time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Bob Dylan once sent a two-word lyric to Ben Harper, a talented songwriter he admired. "Well, well," was the lyric, and Dylan challenged Harper to make a song of it. He did. By adding another "well" to the title, Ben wrote "Well, Well, Well," a stinging lament about America's clean water well going dry due to waste and greed. I thought of this song when I heard that a wheat farmer in eastern Oregon had gotten an unpleasant surprise in May. Some of Monsanto's unapproved, genetically manipulated wheat suddenly cropped up in his field. He had never planted any of these Franken seeds, which have a foreign DNA spliced into them by Monsanto's biotamperers. Field tests of the altered wheat were last done in Oregon in 2001, and the seeds never have been cleared for commercial use anywhere in the world. But there they are, sprouting like weeds. Well, well, well. Ever since Monsanto, backed by its political protectors, began messing with the very DNA of our food supply 2 decades ago, the company line was that it was all perfectly safe and under tight control. Farmers, however, warned that these corporate and political powers were a bunch of profiteering ignoramuses who knew nothing about such basic realities as pollen drift. Pollen from mutant plants can, and does, move many hundreds of miles across state and national borders to contaminate the crops of unsuspecting farmers living far away. 90% of the wheat grown by Oregon farmers is exported to Japan and other nations that do not let their consumers be lab rats for agribusiness hucksters. So the escape of Monsanto's wheat into the wild endangers both wheat exports and the purity of organic crops, not to mention human health and our environment. This is Jim Hightower saying, to follow the drift of this story, go to organicconsumers.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
A new study has shown that genetically modified grain causes stomach inflammation in pigs. This news comes as the biotech company J.R. Simplot has applied for a license to produce a genetically modified potato, and shortly after, Monsanto-owned wheat was found contaminating an eastern Oregon farm.
An international team of researchers led by Judy Carman of the Institute of Health and Environmental Research, located in Australia, has published a peer-reviewed article documenting her findings. Female pigs that ate the GMO diet had almost four times the rate of severe stomach inflammation compared to non-GMO-fed pigs. In addition, their uteri were about 25% heavier. The rate of severe stomach inflammation in male swine was more than two times higher in the GMO-fed pigs, according to the study published in the Journal of Organic Systems.
This morning, the Supreme Court ruled that DNA from living organisms cannot be patented. The court ruled unanimously in favor of the American Civil Liberties Union and the Public Patent Foundation, which sued Myriad Genetics Incorporated. The genetics lab unsuccessfully defended patents on the genes BRCA1 and BRAC2, which are considered genetic markers for breast and ovarian cancer. The patents gave Myriad a monopoly on the test for these genes. The American Civil Liberties Union lauded the Supreme Court decision, saying it means there will be more access to life-saving genetic testing. The court ruled that Myriad's discovery of the genetic markers for some breast and ovarian cancers does not translate to exclusive rights. Now, the company plans to focus on the second part of the ruling, which is in favor of issuing patents on synthetically created living cells.
Thousands of protesters are organizing a carnival against capitalism at the G8 summit that begins in Northern Ireland this weekend. Already, police in London raided a convergence center earlier this week, where activists were organizing for the weekend's protests. More demonstrations are planned in London tomorrow, including civil disobedience in the heart of London's financial district. The protests will target HSBC, Morgan Stanley, and Credit Suisse, as well as other large banks and financial companies that protesters blame for crashing the world economy. For more, KBOO's Janka Soderberg spoke with organizer Penny Quinton in London.
I wonder if you can talk about the G8 protests in London earlier this week and the arrests that took place there.
Well, the riot police raided the central London squat where anti-G8 protesters had set up a convergence centre. And the squatters were inside the building, which was a former police station in a street in Soho called Beak Street, which is off Regent Street in central London. The police were quite heavy. They far outnumbered the number of protesters, and they went in full riot gear, which is unheard of, really. The TV footage, they even had officers in climbing gear climbing up onto the roof. A lot of the protesters went up onto the roof to try and make contact with passers-by below. And I think in general there was a lot of public sympathy because there's so much anger in the country at the moment about the British coalition government's cuts to services and the whole austerity program that they're enforcing on everybody. Interestingly, so 57 people were arrested and various protesters have been bailed not to have anything to do with G8 protests.
Well, it's interesting. You say that it's unusual to have riot police come in these numbers. Well, it may be unusual for protests in London, but not when it comes to the G8. And you yourself were present in 2001 at the G8 summit in Genoa, where the riot police there violently attacked the indie media center that was set up. And just now, 12 years later, some of the victims of that attack are starting to receive justice. Can you talk about that and what's happened in the years since?
Well, Genoa was, I think, one of the worst examples of police violence that I've ever seen in Europe. I think during the G8 protests, which went out over the week, I went out with the hospital teams on those protests filming. And as we were moving around, people were just being beaten indiscriminately in the streets, quite seriously. And I routinely saw the police batten. They were going for girls' faces, so they were breaking their nose, breaking their cheekbones and breaking their chin. And they were literally kneecapping the boys. In particular, at the G8 protests, they were targeting they were targeting mainly Italian and German protesters because the deal had been done with the consulates and embassies between those countries that they wouldn't get much support. The attack on Scola Diaz, which was a convergence centre where people were sleeping, was really quite terrifying and was the culmination of a week of extraordinary police violence. During the protests, tear gas was being dropped from helicopters onto various places where the Genoa Council had given permission for people to set up a kind of market during the G8, and the police were literally dropping tear gas from the sky in canisters. And I just remember looking across, the whole area was just instantly cleared, and it was like people literally being bombed with tear gas from helicopters. So by the time the raid on the convergence centre happened, people were just beaten in their sleeping bags. The police went in on the pretext that there was a Molotov cocktail found inside Scola Diaz. And in fact, it later came to light that police were filmed carrying in the Molotov cocktail and planting it.
Well, and again, Belfast, the site of the G8 summit, and two protests planned this weekend, organized by a trade union coalition and a festival against capitalism, organized by a coalition of different groups, as well as a campaign for a world free from hunger, supported by 200 churches, charities, and aid organizations. I've been speaking with Penny Quinton, an indie media journalist and activist with the global justice movement based in London. This has been Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
One person was killed and at least 60 injured in an explosion and subsequent fire at a chemical plant this morning in Geismar, Louisiana, about 20 miles southeast of Baton Rouge. The Williams Olefins plant annually produces 90 million pounds of propylene and 1.3 billion pounds of ethylene, a popular flammable